Orange County's three mayors have come together for a joint statement in support of abortion rights after the Supreme Court's decision overturning Roe v. Wade on Friday. Chapel Hill Mayor Pam Heminger, Carrboro Mayor Damon Siles, and Hillsborough Mayor Jen Weaver issued the statement yesterday saying, quote, "We share the alarm, sorrow, and outrage that so many in our communities are feeling about this erosion of a fundamental right to privacy," but expressing, quoting again, "a shared commitment to building communities where everyone feels safe and welcome and has the ability to thrive." A statement also linked residents to various abortion care resources. You can read the statement in full via a link on our website, chapelborough.com. Fallout continues from that Supreme Court decision, meanwhile, as healthcare providers scramble to understand what the short and long-term impacts might be. After a draft of the opinion leaked last month, Duke University held an online panel of physicians discussing the possible medical fallout. 97.9 The Hill's Ava Pukach has more on what they had to say.
Dr. Jenna Swartz, a researcher in reproductive health at Duke, said just because we take away the right to a safe abortion does not take away access to abortion overall. He said it means people will instead try to access abortions through less safe matters. Swartz said he's cared for patients who've suffered septic abortions because they could not access safe abortion care. This occurs when an infection in the uterus spreads to the bloodstream.
And prior to Roe versus Wade, there were whole hospital wards filled with women who had septic abortions and had major morbidity and mortality from them. So when I think about going back to that reality, it really would be a horrible consequence of removing access to safe abortion.
90% of all abortions occur in the first trimester of pregnancy, according to Dr. Beverly Gray, an obstetrician and gynecologist at Duke. She said when some states have bans on abortion, their residents in need of abortions go to surrounding states.
We're seeing this sort of tidal wave effect of folks seeking care, and the vast majority of abortions happen in the first trimester. But if you have delays in care due to access, that is going to shift.
Grace said there's a lot of stigma around abortion as it's not widely talked about.
We know that by the time women reach menopause, around 1 in 4 of those women will have had an abortion.
She said she's concerned about abortion education for future physicians. They might not be adequately prepared to handle pregnancy complications in places without abortion health care.
The impact that this legislation could have on training is huge. I think there are many ways that it could impact training, but one is that the next generation of physicians may not be adequately trained to care for miscarriage, for abortion, for complications of pregnancy that arise in the mid-trimester, and that's definitely a concern. It will influence where some of our best applicants for OBGYN apply. Residency.
Swartz said he believes people need the freedom to have control of their bodily autonomy, regardless of their decisions surrounding pregnancy.
I can't think of another instance where we in medicine would take away something that's proven to be safe and effective and force people to resort to some other technique that they can't access through their normal medical care. It just doesn't make sense.
For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Ava Pukach.
That Supreme Court decision has many residents concerned, thinking that their voices and opinions don't matter, but local advocates are urging folks not to get discouraged and instead direct their energy to pushing for positive change. State House Representative Alan Boynsey.
I know for North Carolina, you know, abortion is still legal here. And so, you know, we've been fortunate to have a governor who has vetoed every measure put forth by the legislature that would roll back abortion rights. But, you know, we've got to elect people who are going to preserve that ability to veto, the ability for that veto to not be overridden. So, you know, it's not just important to vote, but it's important to be helping candidates in other districts to get elected. And for the young people out there, I mean, I just got to say, you know, we cannot lose hope. I mean, yesterday was devastating. But the thing is, we've overcome before, and we've overcome really with the leadership and the involvement of young people. So the day that young people count themselves out is the day that we truly lose.
And State House Representative Alan Boynsey speaking there, speaking with 97.9 The Hill after an NAACP abortion rally on Saturday. Get more on that rally on our website, chapelborough.com. In Raleigh, State House and Senate Republican leaders say they've reached a budget deal just a few days before the fiscal year begins in July. They'll be unveiling that proposal later today with votes scheduled later in the week. No details yet, but Medicaid expansion could be on the table. Senate Republicans have joined Democrats in supporting that this year, though House Republican leaders have pushed back. Any proposal will need some Democratic support to become law. No word yet from Governor Roy Cooper, but he has been involved in talks with GOP leaders. Over to Chatham County now, where the health department reported sad news yesterday. Reports of dogs getting sick and even dying after visiting the Farrington boat launch on Jordan Lake. Testing showed no indication of algae blooms in the water, so the cause is still unknown. But health officials are telling residents to keep your pets away from discolored or filmy water that looks like spilled paint, and consult a vet if your pet gets sick after being around water. Finally, as we close out Pride Month, we're revisiting a story from Carolina Connection that was filed earlier this spring. In a private studio on Weaver Street in Carrboro, a trans woman tattoo artist is leveling the power dynamic between artist and client. Carolina Connection's Jade Wilson spoke with Rosemary Van Dyke about her identity as a trans woman while she gave Jade a tattoo.
Nyack Craftswork, a trans lesbian-owned private tattoo studio, is all pink from wall to wall, covered in art from other artists. Tables, chairs, cabinets, fridge, anything with a surface, all pink. A rainbow flag and trans flag hang between a painting of a witch riding a broom. One of the walls hangs a pink and yellow floral backdrop where clients' photos are taken.
Are you ready to get started?
Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna start nice and small, just kinda reacquaint you with some things.
Rosemary Van Dyke, a transgender woman, finds bodily autonomy in tattoos and wants to empower her clients to advocate for themselves and have a safe experience.
When I was 21, I got my first tattoo. I didn't really realize it at the time, but that was sort of like, I knew I was like into it. Like I was kind of hooked from the jump.
Van Dyke took a 7-year hiatus from tattooing, and during that time, she came to accept and live in her trans identity. Once she started her tattoo career again, she worked at a shop in Mebane and rebranded herself as an asset that would make queer clients feel more comfortable.
From my end, is just like, I want to make an environment where we're checking in, like it's a lot of informed, active consent.
One of her clients, Kyla Point, a non-binary trans masculine queer in Chapel Hill resident who uses he and they pronouns, said they are immensely grateful to Van Dyke and her contribution to the queer and trans tattoo community.
I was really stoked to hear that there was a shop opening up in Carrboro that was trans-owned, because it's probably more likely that I'll feel safer here, knowing that there's a trans tattoo artist. Even though we're in a setting where it's like implied that Rosemary's going to be like touching me, moving potentially parts of my body, but like asking if that's okay first, it really highlights when it happens sometimes, how little it had happened before.
In her career, Van Dyke has dealt with microaggressions and abusive power from fellow tattooers. This is common in an industry dominated by white men. Julissa Basilis, a Dominican and Jewish queer tattoo artist based in Richmond, Virginia, experiences it too. Basilis says that made both of them hyper-aware of the power imbalance and gatekeeping of who gets to learn how to tattoo.
Rosemary and I were both working booths at this tattoo convention in Fayetteville, and it was all these white dudes, and we locked eyes. You know, Rosemary was always like, I don't care how you learned how to tattoo. Tattooing should belong to everyone. Like, Rosemary blew gatekeeping out of the water. Like, I thought that I wasn't gatekeeping, and then I met Rosemary.
Van Dyke and her girlfriend, Bree Beck, spent a lot of their time curating a space that would make anyone comfortable, especially queer and trans people.
Since we opened this space, I spent it really leaning into, like, just being myself and trying not to ask permission to be who I am. I want to, I guess, give people permission to do that for themselves.
Van Dyke is breaking barriers and has established herself as an important figure in the tattoo community. In Carrboro, I'm Jade Wilson.
For Carolina Connection, a student-produced radio newscast from the UNC Husband School of Journalism and Media that airs on Saturday mornings during the school year on 97.9 The Hill. Time now for sports, brought to you this hour by Olmaz Jewelers. Academic honors are still coming in for various Tar Heel athletes, including one entire team. UNC men's and women's swimming and diving have been named Scholar All-America teams by the College Swimming and Diving Coaches Association of America. Six Tar Heel baseball players have also been named Academic All-ACC. Congrats to Gage Gillian, Vance Honeycutt, Mikey Madej, Davis Palermo, Brandon Schaefer, and Danny Ceretti. Elsewhere in Carolina sports, the schedule is out for UNC field hockey as they get ready for the fall season. The season begins with the ACC Big Ten Challenge in Winston-Salem as Carolina takes on Michigan August 26th and Iowa August 28th. Then the Tar Heels' home opener will be the following weekend when they host Princeton and Penn for the ACC Ivy Challenge. That's over Labor Day weekend. And then after that, it's a season heavy on the road games with only four home matches against Wake Forest, Syracuse, Virginia, and St. Joseph's. That season will wrap up at Duke on October 29th, and you can get the full schedule online at GoHeels.com. Over to basketball now, where a former Tar Heel star is getting ready to represent Team USA as they go for a spot in next year's World Cup. Justin Jackson will play for the U.S. in qualifying matches this Friday, July 1st, against Puerto Rico in San Juan, and then Monday, July 4th, against Cuba in Havana. And in baseball, the Durham Bulls hit the field again later this morning, still on the road, taking on Charlotte. That game begins at 11:05.